Let's pick up where we left off in Exodus chapter 8 here. It says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Go to Pharaoh and say to him, Thus saith the Lord, let my people go, that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite your whole territory with frogs. And then I will swarm with frogs, which will come up and go into your house and into your bedroom and onto your bed and into your houses and on your, of your servants and on your people, and into your ovens and into your kneading bowls. So the frogs will come up on you and your people and on all your servants.' Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers and over the streams and over the pools, and make the frogs come upon the land of Egypt.' So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt, and the magicians did the same with their secret arts, making frogs come up from the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, 'Entreat the Lord that he may remove the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go, that they may sacrifice to the Lord.' And Moses said to Pharaoh, 'The honor is yours. Tell me, when shall I entreat for you and your servants and your people, that the frogs may be destroyed from you and from your houses, that they may be left only in the Nile?' And he said, 'Tomorrow.' So he said, 'May it be done according to your word, that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God. And the frogs will depart from you and from your houses and from your servants and your people, and they shall be left only in the Nile.' Then Moses and Aaron went from Pharaoh, and Moses cried to the Lord, entreating the frogs which he had inflicted upon Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses and the courts and the fields, so they piled them in heaps, and the land became foul. But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief, he hardened his heart and did not listen to them as the Lord had said." Now, here's another interesting thing. Remember that God is not only bringing judgments upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt, he's also judging their gods. Okay, Egypt had a whole pantheon of gods. I mean, they worshipped everything from the sun to the moon to insects to frogs, and frogs were considered to be a deity to them. They worshipped all kinds of things. And I think that's kind of significant, because it's almost as though God is saying to the people, okay, you want frogs? Here, have some frogs. So it was like, here the frogs were just covering everything. It was like they would be all over this room. You couldn't take a step with squish and squish, squish, frogs all over. You open the oven, there's frogs. You open it, you know, everywhere you turn, there's frogs. They're in your bed. You talk about a judgment, and God is just bringing this judgment on these people, you know, in such a way. But what's interesting is we're not told this here, okay, but we are told that when God causes other judgments, that the land of Goshen, which is where God's people are, which is right in here in Egypt, you know, apparently they're not affected by these plagues at all. Okay, God's people aren't affected, and by the rest of Egypt is. Now, here's an interesting thing. It says here that Pharaoh's magicians did the same thing. Now, I would think, hey, if you really want to be a help, get rid of the frogs. Don't create more frogs. But again, here's the stupidity of dealing with, you know, people who are trafficking in the occult. This is what I kind of assume, okay? It said when the frogs come up out of the Nile, not just out of the Nile, but it says out of all the rivers and streams, the frogs started coming out from every which way. So you would wonder to yourself, well, how are you going to tell the difference between Pharaoh's frogs that his magicians bring forth and the ones that Moses and Aaron brought forth? Well, I would assume this, and this is speculative on my part, but like I said, if you consider the fact that the inference is that the land of Goshen was not affected by this. Well, in certain, you know, they could have shown Pharaoh, okay, how they did this in bringing it out of, you know, let's say a stream or a river or some, or even the Nile that ran through a portion of Goshen. That's where God's people, they probably were able to, you know, show him this power. But obviously, it was extremely limited. All right? Okay, 16 is where we left off. Well, start with 15. Then Pharaoh saw that there was relief, and he hardened his heart and did not listen to them as the Lord had said. And that's kind of an interesting thing, okay? Is it said that once there was relief, Pharaoh hardened his heart again. And again, I think we see a real fact of human nature. How many people, you know, when their lives are in crises, when they're going through difficulties, going through problems, going through trials, going through trouble, then they finally turn to the Lord and say, hey, Lord, help me. I promise I'll change my life and I'll do better or do what you want or whatever. But then when there was relief, what happens? They go right back to their old ways. They harden their heart and they forget the commitment they made at the altar call or whatever it was, right? Because this is the way human heart is. Well, Pharaoh hardens his heart, but then you know, when he finds that there's relief. Then he says here in verse 17, well, actually, read that verse 15 again. He said, "But when Pharaoh saw that there was relief in the, he hardened his heart and did not listen to them as the Lord had said. Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth, that it may become gnats through all the land of Egypt.'" Now, some Bibles might say lice. Okay, it's simply because I think the Hebrew word, you know, that was used there, it's for a biting insect, and they didn't know whether it was lice or whether it had wings or whatever it was. But let's just say it was gnats. He said he struck the dust and it all become gnats. I read somewhere where this guy had said that he had saw, I guess it was in Africa or somewhere, where he saw, you know, hordes and hordes and hordes of gnats, and he said it looked like the sand was moving. I mean, in the air. It was all in the air. It was moving back and forth. I mean, just, you know, trillions, I mean, billions and billions upon of gnats. Well, can you imagine? The dust of the earth is struck and God creates gnats. And now, I mean, if they're lice, it would be even worse because now they're all over you biting you. Okay? But if they're gnats, they're just, you can't hardly breathe without breathing these things in. You know, I mean, again, what do you see here? You see God is dealing with their gods because, like I said, these people worshipped everything from the insects to the stars, you know. And now God says, well, you want to worship insects? Have some insects, or, you know, have some gnats or lice or whatever. But he says that in verse 17, it says, and they did so, and Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth, and there were gnats on man and beast, and all the dust of the earth became gnats through all the land of Egypt. And the magicians tried their secret arts to bring forth gnats, but they could not. So there were gnats on man and beast. And then the magician said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." But Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not listen to them as the Lord had said. Now, here's the interesting thing. It's like, you know, you see how limited the Satan's power is. Okay, now this was something that they couldn't even produce. So it indicates to me that no, they weren't. It wasn't just sleight of hand. It wasn't just part of the tricks. They had a power behind it, and their gods could not match this. You know. This miracle. But like I said, if they really wanted to be helpful, why didn't they get rid of the gnats? So they want to try to make more gnats out of this. But again, it's interesting that even the magicians come to this conclusion before Pharaoh, and they say, hey, this is the finger of God. And then, of course, Pharaoh hardens his heart, doesn't listen to it. Again, what do you see? He's hardened his heart. How? It's because God's shining more and more light on him. And he says, verse 19 again says, "Then the magician said to Pharaoh, 'This is the finger of God.' But Pharaoh's heart was hard, and he did not listen to them as the Lord said." In other words, as he predicted. And verse 20 says, "Now the Lord said to Moses, 'Rise up early in the morning and present yourself before Pharaoh as he comes out to the water, and say to them, Thus saith the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. For if you will not let my people go, I will send swarms of insects on you and on your servants and on your people and into your houses and the houses of the Egyptians. It shall be full of swarms of insects and also the ground in which they dwell. But on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen where my people are living so that no swarms of insects will be there, in order that you may know that I, the Lord, am in the midst of the land, and I will put a division between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign shall occur." Okay, now, when the gnats went away, I guess what happened was that the gnats came. It doesn't say here that Pharaoh entreated the Lord to get rid of the gnats. Apparently, you know, he just says he hardened his heart. So the gnats may have come, and then they may have gone within a day. And because that's what seems to be suggested here. I don't know for sure, but that's what seems to be. Because the next morning he goes down there, like there's no gnats around. He's going down there to bathe in the Nile. And then again, God gives him an ultimatum. "Let my people go, or now I'm going to bring insects upon you." Well, he hardens his heart, and we don't know what kind of insects they were because they're not mentioned here. But if you read in this, the 78th Psalm, in verse 45, it says they were flies. And again, I think that's kind of significant. because what does Beelzebub mean? Lord of the flies. Okay, that is a name that is attributed to Satan. Okay, I remember when Jesus was doing his miracles, his enemies were accusing him of casting out demons by Beelzebub. And Jesus said, if I cast out demons by Beelzebub, then how does the kingdom stand? A kingdom divided itself can't stand. Okay, but what I'm driving at here is, okay, again, you see how there's poetic justice here. These people worship demons through all these different occultic practices. Now God is giving them, swarms of flies to contend with. Now, flies are one of the most, let's say, loathsome creatures on the face of the world. I mean, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I mean, Solomon said this. He said, dead flies make a perfume oil stink, and so a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. And what he means by this is that, if you have a sumptuous meal before you, and I don't care how famished you are, if you see a fly in it, it's going to really take away your appetite, isn't it? The same thing with our life. Okay, if we live a life that's very, very consistent with the way God would have us live, but then if we really blow it bad one day, I mean, take a man like Billy Graham. Look at all the good that he's done in all of his life. But let's just say tomorrow you open a paper and it says that Billy Graham arrested on DUI. What's he going to be remembered for? You see what I'm saying? It says, dead flies make a perfume oil stink, so a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. And it's like, this is what's going to be remembered. This is what people are going to talk about. This is what the media is going to spread all over the world. Right? So this is what I mean as far as how flies, can symbolize so much. And look at the nature of a fly. You ever try to sit down for a picnic or just sit down and just read or something and there's a fly just bothering you? It won't go away. It keeps coming back. Well, they remind me so much of the devil. It's like sometimes if a temptation just keeps coming back at you, it kind of keeps swatting away, right? I mean, to me, that's a very, very prophetic, or in a sense that what these flies symbolize. They symbolize satanic natures, because they feed on filth, and then they're constantly annoying you. You know what I'm saying? And so God is going to say, okay, you want to deal with demons here. You want to worship flies or whatever, it's like have some flies because, even though it doesn't tell us what the insects were here, we do know that from Psalm 78 that they were flies. And so he says, verse 24, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send the swarms of insects on you and on your servants and on your people and into your houses, and the houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of insects, and also the ground at which they dwell. But on that day I will set apart the land of Goshen where my people are living, so that no swarms of insects will be there, in order that you may know that I, the Lord, am in the midst of the land, and I will put a division between. Okay, now here's where he talks about the division, but I believe, it's inferred here, but I believe that there was a division all along, okay, because I don't believe that God would have sent the plague of the gnats and the insects and this type of thing on his own people, but, I just don't think he would have. But that's speculative because I don't know for sure, okay, but for sure the insects are going to be divided. Then he says in verse 25, then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron. Well, read verse 24. Moses did so, and there came great swarms of insects into the house of Pharaoh and on the houses of the servants, and the land was laid waste because of the swarms of insects in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, go sacrifice to your God within the land. But Moses said, it is not right to do so, for we shall sacrifice to the Lord our God what is an abomination to the Egyptians. If we sacrifice what is an abomination to the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not then stone us? We must go a 3 days journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God. He has commanded us. And Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice the Lord your God in the wilderness. Only you shall not go very far away. Make supplication for me. Now, here's an interesting thing. It's just the way the devil works. Now Pharaoh realizes, hey, man, I've got to give in. I've got to make some concessions here. So he says, okay, you can go sacrifice to the Lord. But he says, sacrifice within the land. You can make a sacrifice to the Lord, but make it here. You're not going anywhere. And Moses said, well, we have to go because what we're going to do here is it's an abomination to the Egyptians because they have to offer these sacrifices, these animals. I think what's also interesting is that Pharaoh is a type of saint. And it's almost like if the devil says, okay, I can't keep this person from accepting Christ. Okay? I can't keep him from accepting Christ. But if he accepts Christ, I'll try to get him to live in the world while he tries to worship the Lord. This is one of the, Egypt represents the world, and Pharaoh is saying, hey, you can worship God, but you got to do it. You can't go out of Egypt. You got to stay here and do it, right? Because the devil knows, okay, if I can't keep this person from going down to the altar and accepting Christ, well, at least I'll try to get him not to come out of the world, okay? Continue living the way you want to live, and then, you know, give God all his lip service, okay? That's what the devil will try to do. So, because he knows darn well that if a Christian tries to worship God or live for God while living in the world, well, it's going to be no time at all before you couldn't tell a nickel's worth the difference between him and a heathen. You see? This is the way the devil works. So anyway, he says that, the Pharaoh says that he'll let him, in verse 24, and Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice the Lord your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far away. Make supplication for me. Now he's saying, okay, you can go, but you can't go very far. See, the devil never wants us, he doesn't want us to go very far, does he? It's like, you better be real close to the world. If you can't be in the world, I want you on the borderline of the world. You know, I want you as close as possible to the world because I know it's going to corrupt you. And verse 29, then Moses said, behold, I am going out from you, and I shall make supplication to the Lord that the swarms of insects may depart from Pharaoh and from his servants and from the people tomorrow. Only do not let Pharaoh deal deceitfully again in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord. So Moses went out from Pharaoh and made supplication to the Lord, and the Lord did as Moses asked and removed the swarms of insects from Pharaoh and his servants and from his people. Not one remained. But Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also, and he did not let the people go. Again, I think that you see, you know, once the relief came, then he hardened his heart again. And like I said, this is the way the human heart is. We're willing to, you know, listen to God or obey God only when we feel really pressured because of circumstances and situations. But then, you know, once there's relief, then people go right back to where they were before. Anybody have anything I want to add or share?